Hey, welcome to the podcast. On today's episode, we have Dylan Smucker. Dylan is a songwriter based out of Nashville, Tennessee. He's got a new live EP coming out shortly. Check it out.
If you're listening on Spotify or any other audio platform, you're going to want to make sure you head over to our YouTube channel at Rusick Podcast. There, you can watch the podcast, and we also have live performances featuring all the guests that we have on here. So check it out.
Don't forget to subscribe. There's a lot of things we can learn from P. Diddy.
Insert bad thing here, you know?
Really, our goal with this is like establishing like a sort of Diddy-esque empire among the Nashville music.
Yeah, it's really just to blackmail all of our friends. That's what this is. Yeah.
I mean, it's a sticky operation, I'll tell you that. I mean, when I tell you the maids that probably were there dealing with how sticky the operation was.
Oh, yeah, because you've gone deep into this.
We've gone deep into it, but we'll save that for later, you know?
Yeah, well, P. Diddy's gone deep into certain things, too.
He's
gone.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely... That's a rabbit hole. That's a whole rabbit hole, you know? It's dark. It's dark, but there's a lot of good side to the music industry. It's not everyone's crazy and loves Satan, you know?
Well, the thing... The fact that some people do is a little bit frightening, though.
Oh, man, dude. Doja Cat scares the shit out of me. Her music videos, like, I have sleep paralysis. Like, I watched one of her music videos and I like had demons again. Like, there were demons in my house.
Wait, so how deep down the P. Diddy rabbit hole did you actually go?
Because I mean it's for weeks. As far as you can, it's a governmental cover up, and this is what I'm not the first person to say it. So I'm not worried about my life or anything. I'm also not that cool yet. You know, no one's coming after me. It's the government has been involved in paying out people from P. Diddy's estate.
Okay.
So it's actually governmental agencies are paying out money from P. Diddy's estate to silence people. And if you take the money, you can't say anything. So it's right now they're just silencing thousands of victims. And it's actually insane. Like, I don't know the exact number, but over like the course of 20 years, it's like 3,000 upward people.
Damn. Because for weeks, I'm sorry.
Well, I've always thought like, I feel like just like the Epstein shit, like, we're not going to figure out, like, this is going to be it, like, no other information is going to come out, and the reason is because the people involved in investigating this shit are probably
they're embedded in the thing itself. They're embedded in the government, and that's sad to say, but see, like, I don't know, I don't want to say what I don't know, but what I do know is that the government covered up the Epstein thing and squashed it and didn't give us the documents in court of like all the names. Like, it was, they gave the documents out then, and that was like redacted, like blacked out. And I'm like, how much are we going to get from the P. Diddy stuff? Is it going to be the same kind of redacted nonsense? But the public's doing their own math already. I mean, just who was hanging around him in the 90s and 2000s. And it's now it's like that you just look really bad. I mean,
Even if you don't know, it's still.
So, like, for example, there's pictures of like Hillary Clinton with Epstein and stuff, but then there's also pictures of Trump with Epstein and stuff. So, you know what I mean? And it's like, people will say, but also it's like, shit, you shouldn't associate with those people. And if you do know, I think after Trump found out that Epstein was in his Mar-a-Lago, after he found out some of his dirty dealings, he was banned. So that shows that, like, once you know, okay, get out of here, I don't want to be associated, maybe if only just to save face, you know?
But still, and you don't know how much of that, you don't know when those people are privy to that information, how long, it is messy.
It's very messy, and I just think that I was the kid in, you know, like 2012, thought the world was going to end, we were all going to get chipped. I actually had to have a meeting in my high school because, like, I started a rumor that the RFID chip was the mark of the beast.
I'm
serious. I was like in high school, like, you guys, you need to listen now. It's coming. It's coming. RFID is the mark of the beast.
Did you think 2012 was going to be it?
I thought something was going to happen. And then it was just Putin invaded Crimea and I don't know. There wasn't a lot. That was the biggest event of 2012, really. I remember just being like, oh shit, World War III. And then it's taken another 10 years to get very dangerously close.
I feel like
close.
People have been saying we're on the cusp of World War III. Like,
well, it's the closest
every
we've
year
ever been.
Since World War II.
But the clock is getting closer to midnight all the time. Like,
yeah.
So it's very, you know, we don't need a war with Russia. We don't, like, I got no beef with Russia. I have Russian friends. I have Iranian friends. You know, being a musician, I'm dead ass. I mean, probably shouldn't say that too loud. You know, I'm not an operation. I'm not here. I wasn't born in Moscow or anything, but I have, you know, friends in Russia, artists and stuff, and people mm-hmm. that I love and that can't really get out of the country that, you know, I won't mention her name, but I have a friend who's an artist. She's amazing, incredible artist. And her husband's like just worried he's going to get drafted any fucking day. And I also have friends in Ukraine who a friend of mine, she's a model, and her dad is like hiding. Again, I can't say any names or they'll find this guy hiding in an apartment that's not his house because, dude, the dude's like old, like 60, and they're trying to draft him.
Wow.
So like they're
drafting 60-year-olds?
They are drafting 60-year-olds in Ukraine. It is bad. They are really down to the count on men.
I think that in America, the cutoff is like 28 or something.
It's like,
younger than that. It's 26, I think.
Yeah.
In America.
So I'm out of the, you know, I'm 30 now and I thought about that. But then I looked at Ukraine and all those rules change in like a major catastrophe.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
true, yeah.
And that's the thing. All those rules, they'll change the rules, man.
The thing that I always think about as well is, we're obviously getting that information through a particular filter. So yeah. What actually is going on over there? Not to say that there aren't not to say that there aren't some reliable sources that you can get here.
Yeah.
But I'm sure just being in that environment is so different.
Yeah.
Like actually seeing what that is, I'm sure, drastically different than what we're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
That good?
Cool.
There we go.
Perfect.
Yeah. For weeks. I shouldn't say, probably for a couple of weeks once the P. Diddy stuff dropped. I was so in the dark with all of it, I had no idea. And then I kept asking Brian, I was like, so what's going on with P. Diddy?
Why
and
did you was, just assume
and
that?
And he
I knew.
Was just, well, because of course you knew. And
are
I
we rolling?
Was,
are we rolling? Probably not yet. No? Yeah. Yeah.
You guys and I was funny. Just, I was just convinced, I was like,
just be careful. You put the face.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You keep it off a little bit?
There you go.
Or like
what's up?
Don't cover your face.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't want to be like,
you
got to
have that.
Yeah, yeah.
Have that beautiful face on the camera.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, for weeks, I was totally out of the know on the P. Diddy stuff, and I kept asking Brian. He was giving me shit. He was like, of course. He's like, you're fucking with me. You know all of this stuff. I was like, no, I don't. So finally, one day, I just said, fuck it. If Brian's not going to tell me, I need to do some research. And I did this.
He's your main source of it. He's like, pretty much. He's like, Jamie.
Still don't know anything about the fucking.
Well, I mean, it's. The one thing people don't want to uncover on the P. Diddy stuff is the secret society aspect of it.
Yeah, and that's I feel more like it's prevalent than most people think with a lot of
I can say that because I'm not in the Illuminati. I am not in a secret society whatsoever. I am not a Freemason. Obviously. I was asked to join the Freemasons years ago. I also have no beef with the Freemasons. I think a lot of our, you know, founding fathers and a lot of good presidents and a lot of good guys, you know, were Freemasons.
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton. Almost every president has been a Freemason. Was he really a Mason?
No. I would just
probably
made me think of like National Treasure.
He has to be then. He has because of that movie.
That movie came out, and they're like, no, he's got
to
be one.
Don't
like,
the Freemasons have like nothing to do with any of that shit though? Like I've heard.
Well, why is there a lodge in every county?
I guess that's what they would say.
Why is there a lodge in it? Why don't they have windows?
They've been around for a long time.
Why isn't there any windows?
There you go.
Why? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All the windows are blacked out. A lot of them. The lodge over here in East Nashville.
What, you think they're doing like satanic rituals in there? And
I mean,
I think we need to make a pact, Brian, that if one of us becomes a Mason, that we tell the other person like what's going on.
I have asked to join now.
Should we do an undercover mission?
Okay, well,
back on the podcast.
It's like an undercover boss, but for the Freemasons.
You're not far off from my plan. Okay, so, okay. But now I can't. Now I can't join it because they'll never let me on if they see this podcast. But I did. I did ask to join the Lodge of Nashville, and they were like, "What?
That
what?
One on 7th?
Yeah, the big one.
You think they're sacrificing bachelorettes in there?
No, I think they're doing a lot of like old Egyptian rites of passage and esoteric type stuff. And I think the deeper you get into Masonry, the more you learn about their secrets and. There's like, I mean, I could tell you what I think they're big. I actually studied Masonry for about almost 10 years.
I'm
going to
sound really
years
ignorant
now.
Right
10
now.
Years
I'm
going
to sound really ignorant, but what are Egyptian rites of passage? I'm just fascinated. Right
okay.
Now.
So like the Book of the Dead type stuff.
Okay.
I've read Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike. Albert Pike was a known Confederate general, also grandmaster of the KKK and also grandmaster wizard or whatever they call it of Luciferianism. Okay.
So big fan.
And I always told people I'm not a fan, by the way. I'm a Yankee at heart. I come from Pennsylvania and I love the South too. But Albert Pike, when they were taking down all the statues during the BLM stuff, I was like, when are they going to go for Albert Pike? Like, when are they going to go for Albert Pike? He's got a statue in Washington, D.C. He's like a known like, you know, Confederate general, KKK guy.
Yeah.
I think they finally did take his statue down. I wish I had, like, someone to fact check me on that. But I think it's actually, they did actually take it down. There were people protesting about it. And, but the thing about Albert Pike is he is their, like, number one top Freemason. Like, he is
really
their revered guy, like, father of modern Freemasonry of the Scottish Rite. And I read his book, Morals and Dogma, and it's confusing more than anything, but there's so many like Egyptian rites, like stuff that literal Egyptians were doing, like as secret society degrees that they were doing in ancient times. And they have these big stories they go over, and most of their rituals are just like kind of boring, kind of scripted like plays.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as what I'm seeing from my friends who are Masons and what I've seen from, you know, what the History Channel will show you and YouTube will show you, but it sounds like it's just really, it sounds like it's a cover for something.
Okay.
And like I said, this is hard to say without maybe infuriating some Masons. I've sat down with a lot of Masons and I always ask them, do you believe in God? And they go, well, yeah, I believe in a higher power. And I go, no. Do you believe in God? Like God, like G-O-D. And they're like, oh yeah, we believe in a higher power. And it always rubs me the wrong way. And I do think that some of the higher level Masons are involved with the occult. And where that goes, I don't know. But I do know that the Illuminati itself, you could say that is a Satanist organization. You see it in the music videos. You see it in TV. You see the devil represented, overrepresented in music videos. And everyone's like, oh, it's art. It's edgy.
Yeah.
Like, no, they have to put that in there. If you're in the club.
Oh, you think it's like a requirement?
Yeah.
You think, okay.
So but isn't there some degree of just people trying to be edgy? Because, like, you know, dating way back, there's always been those bands that hint
at exactly. AC/DC, everybody.
Yeah, AC/DC, yes.
But also,
Slayer. Like, how long even Slayer, you know, half their lyrics are about Satan, but and
it's kind of badass. I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
It is badass. And the lead singer is like Catholic.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you guys think?
And you ask him about it. He's like, oh, it's all just
Black Sabbath is a Christian band because I think Black Sabbath is a Christian rock band. I mean, the most badass Christian rock band.
You think so, Ozzy? Lifelong drug addict.
I'm not saying he's a good Christian.
Yeah, I think I think once you really get Jesus, he works out all the bad stuff out of you.
Yeah,
I think it kind of works like.
See, I have a different feeling with all of the Masonry stuff. I always feel like people, to me, I imagine those things like clubs in the sense that like people, like
a men's club.
Yeah. Like people join men's clubs and associate
I wish we had
things
more
like
of them.
That. Yeah. Because they, for it, it fulfills something in their life.
Yeah. And, I think community is a necessary
thing. I think that's
fraternity.
I think also part of it too, when you have something like the Freemasons that has obviously been established for a long time, there's a certain credibility and sort of power that's associated with that.
Oh, yeah.
And not to say it in a cynical way, but I think that people are just attracted to that, just an innate part of being a person is we like that status that things that bring.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So in I might have a simple way of looking at it, but that's my simple Jack take.
Yeah, that's kind of it's a great take on it. Like I said, I've met so many Masons that are really good guys and good dudes and smart guys. But then you have the Catholic Church, I think, you know, what was it in... Most of, I don't know, it was from like 1400 to, I think modern day, a lot of Catholics will say you can't be a Catholic and be a Mason. Like they banned Masonry in certain countries.
Interesting.
And even so, I think it was the King of Prussia that banned Masonry because he thought that people were doing secret meetings to plot revolution while they're like, oh, we're just a men's club. So, but also secrecy lends itself to, I guess you could say, you know, a bunch of theory about what they're doing. Like, if you do have a secret and you don't have windows, people are going to speculate, you know?
But I think even that, I guess what I'm getting at is even that, there's something just innately thrilling about that for people.
Oh,
Even if behind closed doors, you're not doing anything maniacal, you're not doing anything mischievous, the fact that other people are thinking that could be what's going on.
I really
probably try to like play that up.
Exactly.
It's probably entertaining.
That's how you get members. But also, did the devil not tempt Eve with knowledge?
There you go.
So it's fishy sometimes because I come from a very, you know, Christian background and I'm not shy to say it. You know, I wear my cross all the time to keep the demons away because I've read that book, Morals and Pike. Okay, so this is where we're going to go esoteric here. I read Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike. You can barely get that book online. I think on Amazon it's like $500 to keep you from buying it. Okay. It's usually passed down from Masons. I got it at a bookstore that someone had dropped off by accident. Kid comes back 2 days later. Oh, I wasn't supposed to give that book away. He got the information he was supposed to. So we were like, I don't know. I just, it's gone now. I wasn't going to give it back. And sorry, kid. And I read the whole thing, and then I started having very, very demonic sleep paralysis dreams. Okay. I'm talking from reading this book. It was no other esoteric occult, because I was studying the occult this time in my life.
That's some Rosemary's Baby shit right there. That is terrifying. Dude,
So listen, it's like I start having these dreams that these entities are entering my room through the door.
Okay.
And it's this skinny, like just like black hole type, like no features, like not like a demon from the movies. Yeah. It's like just literally like a black hole and like staticky and like like an unfazed lightsaber. Like,
yeah.
You know, and it's in my room. And then every night it would get closer. And this also happened after a bad shroom trip that kind of cracked my psyche. And so it could have been that too. Could have been the psychedelics. Very bad shroom trip. All of a sudden, just very dark energy in my life. And I'm also reading this Albert Pike book. Mm-hmm. Until finally I had this entity, what I would call a demon, or you could call negative spirits. I mean, there's so many different words all throughout time from different cultures that you could call them. Until finally it's over my bed, like straddling me like this. Like over top of me like this. Like he's like feeding on my fucking fear.
That's some vampire.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis? Yeah, it's so scary as fuck.
Scariest thing you can encounter.
I've had it before, but my mother, as a kind of bit of an aside, my mother got it after my baby sister was born. She'd never had it in her life.
And well, they come for the babies.
Yeah, and she got insane sleep paralysis to a point, like she was, for her, it was aliens. So for her, she, like, there was always some kind of alien interdimensional presence that was like fucking with her. And it came out of nowhere. She'd never had anything like that in her life. And it took years. Like it took a long time for her to kind of wean herself off of that. And she tried a bunch of different things, but like I've gotten, it's always been much more abstract. It's always just been like that.
You feeling can't move
of,
your body.
You can't move. Or like you're stuck. You're there, but you're not there. That kind of thing. That is absolutely terrifying.
I've only had it like a couple of times, but the times
I've had it,
terrifying.
Most times I've had it, there's no like interdimensional beings messing with me. You know, lower dimensional, higher dimensional. It's always lower dimensional sleep paralysis. Sometimes it's just like I can't move my body, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm trying to roll over, and my face is in the pillow, and I'm suffocating. Yeah, you know,
that's the worst.
Something
feeling.
Like that.
The worst,
but then there has been some that were like I can see my shirt where I laid it beside the bed in my pajamas right there. I can see my partner beside me. I can see the heater. And at one time I had an out-of-body experience when I was having sleep paralysis. I had a quartz heater back when I was like living on the west side, and we had like really shitty AC, and you had to have like an extra room heater when I was like 20. That time out-of-body, the quartz heater had some sort of cyclic field going around it. So like everything else in my sleep paralysis was like normal. Like there were the dogs. I can see my body on the bed. I can see my partner there at the time. I can see my clothes on the floor. And then when I woke up, everything was right like there.
So it was a complete out of body, so, like third person experience. Yeah. That's wild.
And so that's when I really decided it's time to stop messing with the occult. It is time to stop even just reading about it. Because, you know, you come from a Judeo-Christian background. You get out of the house and you're like, well, I'm going to read about this shit.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll buy some tarot cards, you know? And I think it's you know, like the Ouija board stuff. It's like a slippery slope, man. Like you might think it's just fun and games, and next thing you know, you have demonic oppression or demonic, God forbid, you know, possession. Yeah,
and I think for a lot of that kind of stuff too, there's sort of a split with people where whenever people start interacting with something that is outside of the physical world, it goes one of two ways. Either people think of it as some sort of spiritual, religious experience, or they think of it as some kind of like alien out. When I say alien, I don't just mean like little green men, but some kind of like alien experience outside of our world. When in my mind, it's why are those two things separated in that way? Like,
it's language. Yeah. It's language. Like someone might look at a tree and say, well, that's a hickory tree. And in a different language, they're talking about something completely different, but you're looking at the same thing.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it.
So language is sometimes just limiting that way, where you don't, you know, someone in a different culture might have experienced the same thing, mm-hmm. but you can't get together on the language of it because your cultures are so different. But yeah. I think human beings have been experiencing.
Yeah, it's not a new thing.
Yeah, dude. I mean, the Druids were tapping into it. They were like channeling nature spirits. They were doing human sacrifice. The Mayans, human sacrifice. Aztecs, human sacrifice. I mean, there was. So there's this really sinister side of it that's like, let me release the human spirit as an offering, which is insane, to ever say, you know, if we kill these people, guys, give us some virgins. We're going to sacrifice them. The rain is coming. All right. I just need 15 virgins, please. And that sounds like climate change these days. It's like, you know, it's like less humans makes the planet better. And it's like, wait, hold on. So what should we do with them? What should we do with the extra humans?
Yeah.
You know, and people are like, well, less of them, it's better for climate change. And you're like, you sound like a fucking Aztec warrior right now. Okay. Like you sound like maybe you're trying to get rid of a bunch of us to save the earth. So, but these ideas get wrapped up in politics and they get wrapped up in policy. And I'm a humanist, man. I think we need more people. We just need more space. We got to go to Mars. We got to go to other planets.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
You know,
I mean, there's tons of space on Earth, too.
There's a lot of space. There's tons of space. You're right.
You ever fly over the country, look out the window. There's a lot of nothing out there.
There's a, especially in America.
Yeah.
You know, India's a little crowded. America, India's a little
crowded. We're very lucky here.
India's over there, but we still got room here.
They got guys over there making food with their feet. You're going to get immunity. You go travel India. You're going to get some immunity.
So when you're talking about these kind of things, I'm curious. Are you separating, this is something that I, with behind my two eyes, am experiencing in my mind, or is this something that, because to me it's beyond that. To me, these kind of things are things that we actually interface with in the world in some way, that they're there, we just can't experience them in the immediate way that we experience other things in life.
For example, shrimp can see in like infrared or some shit, you know?
Yeah.
So there are things happening beyond our perception that we cannot see. I totally believe that. The occult has gotten their hands on it so hard. They're so good at this. They are so, there's a song with Thundercat, and we should play it. I wonder if we should play it. There's a song with Thundercat.
We'll probably get copyrighted.
Exactly. There's a song with Thundercat and the Gorillas, and they go, they taught themselves to be a cult.
Oh, yeah. It's a great song.
They didn't know its many strategies. You know, on Cracker Island,
he'll just sing the whole song for us.
Dude, I'm like, what? I'm like, Cracker Island? That sounds like England. Cracker Island? That sounds like, I don't know. I'm interpreting.
That whole record, by the way, great record.
It's amazing. But talking about the occult openly in a song, like, you think that these celebrities don't know what the fuck's going on? They know what's going on, dog.
Yeah.
We are the guys here speculating about what's possibly happening at these higher levels of power and I guess just power, not even government, because a lot of these guys are unelected officials.
Yeah, that it is. I think it all does distill down to power, and that takes a lot of different forms.
I mean, and also just for shit's sake, Jesus was taken on his 40 days of fasting. He was taken to the top of Mount something. I'll get it wrong. Sorry, Christians. and the devil was like, I will give you the kingdoms of the world if you bow down to me. And that is the metaphor, I feel like, for the modern music industry. I swear.
Well, it's like, give me your soul. This exact same conversation.
Give me your soul.
Not that long ago, yeah.
And I will give you everything.
Yeah. And this goes back to what we were actually talking about. This
I got
to
spark this because it's too deep.
We were talking about this
this podcast went off the rails real fast.
We started just deep in this, bro.
I swear we're going to talk about music.
We will.
No, but we were talking about this a couple episodes ago with Chris. We were talking about how it's the exact same idea of that temptation of veering away from whatever your creative direction is, and that happened, and it's something that we fall short of constantly, but there are those North Stars that we want to be pointed towards. There is in my mind, and Brian agrees, because we've talked about this many times in our life, but to me, music is art. There is something there's a level
Crack lighter, that's just ridiculous. I need to turn it down like this. Sorry, keep going.
I think
there's something ethereal there.
And I feel very strongly that that art is not subjective. I mean, again, we all have our own tastes. We all have the things that we prefer and not prefer. But I do think that there are things that we point towards as good, as capital G good, right?
Well, I think it comes from religion, and I think I think throwing religion out with, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater is a very bad idea. I think it's a very, I mean, like I, you know, say what you want about Jordan Peterson. I don't like a lot of his political views lately because I think Israel's committing a genocide, but that's a whole nother different thing. That's my personal stance. But, you know, Jordan Peterson himself says that, you know, you can't just get rid of religion and expect the void to be filled.
Oh, it's literally the thing we've built all of society on for the last.
And so he's an atheist. He's an atheist. Yeah. He's like so close to getting Christ. He's so close. He's so close to being saved. And that's my own personal opinion about it. I think Jesus is the man. I struggle with my concepts of reality all the time. I'm always questioning myself. I don't have like a set view of reality. I'm willing to have my mind changed.
Exactly.
But you can't say that what Jesus Christ was saying was bad. Like you can't. Like you can't actually, like there's no argument anybody who wants to have a debate with me could say the stuff Jesus did and said was bad.
Yeah.
And it's bad for people.
I think where it gets messy for people, for me at least, where I get frustrated is you can disagree on, let's say, the historical,
right,
whether or not certain things happen the historical
life.
Yeah. But that being said, you're not going to sit here and argue to me that if you lived the life that person wanted you
love
to live,
that neighbor and stuff,
that world wouldn't be a better place. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And I'm vocal about that with my friends, you know, and people I'm in town with. Like, you know, I know I don't have my shit together at all. But I need a moral compass.
And that is the thing you just nailed it. That's the thing that really infuriates me with that conversation oftentimes is people on the other side of the fence will say, well, look, all of these people, they're not living their life in a Christ-like way. And it's like, no, you're missing the point. The point is that everyone's not Jesus. The point is
you're trying to be like Jesus. Yeah.
You're pointed in that direction. But I think that also applies to art. And I think that people get sidetracked, they get off course, and there are so many different elements at play that want to pull you this way and that way.
Oh yeah.
And it's so hard.
A lot of it's trying to take you away from your own self.
Yeah, it's so hard to steer the course. And to me, the people in my life, the artists in my life, and I don't use that term loosely, that I respect the most and that their body of work means the most to me are those people who have stayed the course.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they have the ability to just keep moving forward towards whatever that thing is. And it's going to change and it's never static. You're always going to be moving forward, but that's so hard to do. And it's the same thing that we were talking about in terms of religion. It's like, you're constantly going to be falling short of that.
Oh yeah.
But regardless of that, you just have to keep moving forward towards it.
Well, I'll just say right now, because people need to hear this shit as young men too. Like, without my faith and without like praying and having Jesus, like I said, like I'm not a good Christian or I'm not the best Christian or I'm not a Catholic or anything. If anything, I lean Orthodox. I love the Orthodox. I listen to like Orthodox chants and stuff in the sauna. But I had a hard time in this town getting over certain addictions. I mean, I was banging lines for years and, you know, most of my friends will know that. And it took me like having a family and getting my shit together, at least enough to maintain, you know, keeping a job and keeping the lights on and, you know, being successful in my career to realize that was just terrible for me. But it wasn't, dude, it wasn't me on my own that pulled myself out of it. And I have to say this, I would say it in an award ceremony, like, thank you, God. I prayed so much for divine intervention in my life and I got it in some way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that might look different for everybody, but some people don't need it. Like, okay, if you're super morally superior and you don't need religion, great. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're just like a saint all the time and you're such a great guy. And for me, if I didn't have Jesus, I'd actually I'd probably be dead. So I'm not the kind of guy who's like, Jesus saved me. Mm-hmm. No, like Jesus saved my, like I would be dead. Like, not just like, oh, I'm saved. Like, no, like I'm saved. Like I saved my life. If I didn't have a moral playbook, I would be dead, period. I would have had my last banger line and that would have been it.
Yeah.
And that would have been it. And, you know, there's other guys in the music scene, they dealt with heroin, and I know some friends that have dealt with harder drugs and even worse things or worse catastrophes to go through. But I got lucky, man. I mean, I remember being so high sometimes, like, you know, and you have so much left, flushing it down the toilet to make sure that I don't fucking OD. Like, mm-hmm. flushing it down my toilet and getting in a cold shower and being like, don't fucking die. Don't fucking die. Mm-hmm. Do not fucking die right now. Everyone's going to be so disappointed if you fucking die right now. And if it wasn't for me pulling on a higher power, or like really, really trying, or like just reaching for something, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And like, you know, the rock of Gibraltar, like the rock on, you know, Christ is a rock on which I stand. I mean, it makes me emotional thinking about it. I don't think I'd be here today without some kind of moral compass. So you could put that up to psychology. You could just put that up to the religion has certain standards and morals and Ten Commandments. But for me personally, I needed something bigger than me to pull myself out of just like being like an animal.
I think oftentimes too, when this conversation is had, people will hear something like that. And again, people on one side of that fence will say, oh, well, you're using that as a way of
like a crutch or something. Yeah,
as a crutch or as a way of a handicap, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think you're missing the point. And the point is you have to have something point towards. Yeah. And by definition, if you don't have that, if that thing doesn't exist, if that thing is not there in the world, then you don't have something to point to. Like, it just doesn't function.
Like, the Ten Commandments are super ancient, dog. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't bang your neighbor's wife. Don't steal your neighbor's goat. Don't worship demons and idols and stuff. And, you know, like, it's
pretty reasonable stuff in there.
It's pretty reasonable stuff, you know? And I think it's kept society on track for a long time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so just to quickly disregard that stuff in our modern culture, and even go the other way. The other way is the edification of darkness, the prolification of darkness. Like, oh, it's just art to show everyone in devil horns. It's just art. It's like, well, what's the moral implications of that? Mm-hmm. The devil represents everything bad. He's like the boogeyman. And if we're just going to put him in every music video, mm-hmm. and just watch horror movies all the time and you know, infect culture with demonic ideas, like, how's that going to affect people's mental health when they have no moral compass?
And I think you can, that's not to say, at least for me, that's not to say that I want an absence of those things in the world. What I want is people to take those things seriously. I think that you can explore those ideas in art. But I find that a lot of it's very flippant, and a lot of it is just like grabbing your dad's gun and just like, that's what it feels like to me when I see those things.
It's
in culture.
Scary.
No, it is. And it's like, okay, let's take a breath here and let's actually explore this.
Okay, so it's cool if it's
way.
Like a couple of times and it's one guy doing it, but it's like, this is systematic. Okay. And then it goes back to the P. Diddy stuff. Why is it so prevalent in music? Yeah. Why is the devil so prevalent in music? Well, why is
the reason,
you know?
Well, obviously it's hard to understand why that stuff is prevalent. The reason I've justified it in my head is because the people involved in these kind of things, right? They're ultra rich, crazy wealthy beyond what we can even imagine, ultra powerful people. So when you get to that point, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like that's
and your pleasure
that's
centers.
How I can make it make sense in my head. Like, these people already have everything, you know, all the power, all the money. Like, where do you go from there?
All the baby oil.
Start banging kids.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah.
Where else? What's left? You know,
well,
to get to a position like that, you obviously have to be an insanely lustful, greedy person, right?
Yes, so yes. Power attracts bad people. We know
when
this.
You hit that cap, you're still that same person, so you got to go somewhere else, and that's where all this fucked up shit
I think
comes
so.
In.
I think that it is a power thing. Like, having power over somebody else is the biggest power.
Yeah. And,
it's can get really gross and bad.
And I think another thing that having that belief in God does, another function that it serves, is you are always cognizant of the fact that there is something, that there is
watching.
Something above you.
Yeah.
Well, not even that, but that there's something above you. So when you are in that position, like Brian was saying, where you feel like you've hit the ceiling and you want to go beyond that, and you want to just go to the next thing somehow, having that belief, that true belief, you know that there is something beyond all of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, you're not the ultimate power in the world.
Exactly.
You're not,
exactly.
You know, and you and have I, these
I think
guys
it makes
like,
you much, I think it makes you function in a much healthier way. Again, not, that's so. Not to say that other people can't function in a healthy way without that, but I think that it truly does, it grounds people in a way that other yeah. things can't.
Yeah, well, I mean, the human spirit. Okay, so what? So everyone's had religion up until what? Like the Communist Revolution.
It's about 5 minutes ago.
And no, I'm saying, yeah, in human history, like, yeah. Like we've had a million religions reaching for spirit in so many different ways, good and bad. You know, mm-hmm. it's gone from child sacrifice to building amazing cathedrals in mm-hmm. Europe that are just still standing today that are like, wow, like everyone put their money into that. Like, and if you don't think the pyramids weren't built out of like a spiritual intuition, you're crazy because no one sure. does anything that big unless it's like the gods are making us do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
You know, and like, so we're not going to do anything incredible unless we have this, even if it, okay. So like I said, I'm always willing to be wrong. I would never blaspheme God because I do believe in God. But even if we're just creating God in our own minds for it to serve us in our evolution. Mm-hmm. Like we need a higher standard mm-hmm. as human beings than the stuff we're doing to each other right now, which is, oh, is it okay to kill somebody in war? Like I come from the Amish people. We come from pacifists, bro. Like I don't have a lot of ancestors that fought in wars and stuff, you mm-hmm. know, like I don't have any of that in my blood really. It's, you know, I got flat feet like a farmer, like I play music. And I ask myself all the time, like, you know, yeah, if I defended America, I love America. If America were invaded by one of our major enemies and they drafted me, you know, what would I do? You know, would I sit it out in jail and say, oh, it's not a war I want to fight? I mean, a lot of the wars we're fighting right now is a war I don't want to fight. I think that Israel should fight on their own. We don't need to give them all their money.
Totally.
Were they there with us in Iraq? Did they help us in Afghanistan? Did they help us in Syria? I don't remember the IDF being there. No, it was the Peshmerga and the Kurdish in Iraq that were there saving our asses. And then we fucking left them there. Mm-hmm. And then we left them there. Yeah. We just totally let the Kurds be slaughtered. And they were our biggest ally. I remember following guys on Instagram from the Peshmerga. And so I see this money going to the Middle East. And it's like, you know, if right now I was drafted and I had to go fight in Iran. Like I said, I got friends in Iran. Yeah, we have enemies that are just completely polar opposites to us that we won't be able to agree with in this country. There's just so many adversaries mm-hmm. around the world. But honestly, I'm like, dude, we don't need to be in Ukraine. We don't need to be we don't need to be helping anybody over there. Like literally the closest people totally. We should be investing in is probably like Southern America and making sure that the Canadians are all right up there.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah, Justin Trudeau, I don't know about him, man.
Our tax dollars should be helping you
know,
us.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, so it's tough, man. It's tough.
You can get there a lot of different places. You can get there through a lot of different avenues.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I mean, that was a little bit of a rant, but telling you guys how I feel about the world. But I, you know, we're not doing a lot of good with what we have. And we could be we could be building starships, mega ships to Mars with the money that we've sent to Ukraine. We
oh,
could
100%. Be the amount of money we have sent to Ukraine.
We could have a base on the moon.
When you imagine what else could be done with the money we're sending overseas.
How much does a moon base cost?
To me, the thing that's most infuriating about it, and the thing I think is really quite fascinating about it too, is for me, I have my own personal feelings on, let's say, isolationism and just how I feel like we should interface with FDR all the time. I have my own feelings on how we should interface with the world. But just on a popular level, the vast, 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 vast majority of Americans don't want us in these places. So it's this weird juxtaposition.
Like taxation without representation.
Exactly. Nobody does. The only reason we are is because people are making money on it.
Exactly. And the weird disconnect is the vast majority of us think, I don't, you know, again, that doesn't mean your heart can't go out to all of these people, but to think
war is awful.
Exactly. But to think, why are we involved in any way?
Money.
Exactly. And that's what's kind of...
Literally all comes down to that.
And I think it's like what John Lennon, you know, said about, you know, we're led by insane people for insane, you know, like psychopathic people for insane means or what he said, something like that. You know, we're led by psychopaths. Like John Lennon said this on camera. Like he probably knew a little bit what was going on at the higher echelons of power. Did you see the painting of the king? Did you guys see that?
What?
Which king?
The Witch King? Yeah, no, the Witch King. That's what it looks like. That's like the witch. It's like Witch King of Angmar type there you shit. Go. Okay, yeah.
Now we're okay. talking.
Prince Charles, King Charles, sorry, got a photo. A painting of him done. Okay. I misspoke there. He got a painting of him done, and he revealed it. And there's a video of it. And they tear the thing down. And he goes, he's like, it's so scary that even he was like, oh.
A strong breeze would, you know, blow him
dude,
over.
Yeah, he's, yeah, his hands are so red, is so big and red. Like I don't know what he's doing with those hands. It could be. Like, I don't know. Who knows how long he's got
they
left?
They keep it in the family. They can't
something with those people, and then they pull the painting off, and it's like him. Like, you know, he looks pretty cool, but it's pretty metal. But like, it's like red flames looking background.
Yeah, a little too on the nose.
Looks like the King of England in hell. So I don't know who thought that was like a great idea, or it goes back to, is this secret society, is this devilry stuff going on deeper than we think? Is it just satanic panic like the 80s, yeah. 90s? Or is America discovering something? Are we on to, you know, are we on to something? Mm-hmm. So you know, it all goes back to that. It's just, it's like, it feels like, I mean, this podcast, I didn't think we'd get this deep. I really didn't want to talk about music, guys.
Dude, I love it. I love it.
But no, honestly, this is, I hope we get some clicks on this, because this is the stuff I want to talk about with my friends and like,
yeah.
you know, my coworkers and my band and shit. I'm just like, why? I mean, my buddy who's an atheist got baptized, and I remember telling him all the time, bro, it's a little weird that the devil's in all these pop videos. No, man, no, no. He for years he'd be like, no, wait. Add it, and I just kept praying for him. I was like, I hope he gets baptized.
But I feel like it's always been like that, you know, like bands.
I think, but it's also controversy.
Since the inception of like the rock and even in the blues era, like
totally. Yeah. But did you hear about Robert the soccer Johnson player recently? You hear about the soccer player recently that was actually gagged to not mention Jesus anymore. They paid him to not mention,
really,
yet to not be political at
wait,
events.
Where? I mean, I should look
it
up.
I wish I had ChatGPT going right now, but I just heard it.
Do you know what country this was? Or
I would get it wrong. Okay. I think a Southern American country, but okay. I mean, they're
check out.
You know, they're yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of Catholics in Southern America. You know, I also think, I don't know, the Pope, dude. I've never been about the Pope. I don't know. Sorry, Catholics.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really the succession of St. Peter or not. I don't.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of shit has come out about the Catholics that we don't need to get into. But
no, well, you know that most. I looked at a statistic the other day, and like, I hope people fact check me if I'm wrong, but they said that more sexual abuse happens in public schools than it does in the Catholic Church.
I believe that, yeah.
There's a lot
of fucked up shit going on out there.
I
wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, even people I know have had like the weird gym guy, you know, that was like banging like 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, that's somebody I know told me this story. Yeah. I don't know a single person I know told me anything about the Catholic Church or getting diddled. I mean, so that's just my own personal experience. I know more people that have been abusing the public school system than I do in the Catholic Church. So
I believe it.
You know,
and then you think how much of that meme in the zeitgeist is perpetuated to reflect poorly on the Catholic Church, and how much of that is, you know, I mean,
I think their fish hats are weird. I don't know why they need the big fish hat.
Yeah.
I don't get, but yes, there's a lot of, you know what I mean? It's like pagan. They got the big fish hat. It's like a fish mouth. I'm telling you, a lot of the symbolism too is pagan symbolism. It's kind of been hijacked, you know. I don't think Jesus was born on December 25th. Mm-hmm. I think the medieval ages or whatever his name was, that's what they were trying to support the economy. It's like, let's all buy a bunch of, that's why they still do that. Let's all buy a bunch of shit, the worst economic season of the year, you know. Meanwhile, I'm trying to save my acorns like the squirrels because I know winter is coming, you know. It's coming.
Man, oh, man. Yeah, so how much of that factors into your art? How much of that factors into what?
I wish that I could represent my
own.
Gotta
work that in there, dude.
Yeah. Well, I'm not Bob Dylan. I actually don't like protest songs. Let me tell you why.
I don't either. I mean, anyone who knows me knows that the person that I look up to more than anyone outside of my family and friends is Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
But I hate protest songs. I just
think it's cheesy and it's dated. I'm sorry for people that are writing protest songs right now. So, you know, it's whatever.
Well, I think it's always been that way. I think there are certain artists who can any protest song, I believe, that someone has written that we've seen great value in, it works in spite of being a protest song, not because of being a protest song.
Because it's a good song.
Exactly.
So it's hard to find a good protest song. Yeah, like, exactly. It's, you know, because also you're dating yourself. Like, you're writing a song about an era that's going to be outdated, and like how fast the news cycle moves, like how quickly it's not going to be relevant.
It's unbelievable. You know? Like, if you listen to, I think you could probably make a good argument that The Times They Are Changing as an album probably has the largest collection of what we would consider, or people would consider, not myself, but people would consider his protest material on that album.
Oh yeah. I mean, The Times They Are Changing, it's like a great line because the times keep changing.
Exactly. But every one of those songs will be relevant 600 years from now.
Yeah. Like
whether it was 1963 or 64, or 2024, or whether it's
not like so dated. It's not like, or whether the lyrics are kind of generalized a bit.
Exactly. It's like whether that is any time in between or any time after or before, you can listen to any of those songs and they resonate with you because you're a human being.
Yeah.
And because those stories, they're stories. I mean, that's what we do.
Storytellers,
at least in my head, like that's what we do, is we tell stories. That's how I think human beings actually move through the world, is through stories. I think it's the only way that we actually interact with the world.
100%.
And those stories are just so powerful. I think we mislabel a lot of things protest songs that I don't think we should call that. And I think a lot of, generally, I completely agree. Anything that's written for the purpose of that,
But then it's your thing. Like, so the reason I don't write protest songs and I don't involve my world beliefs in my music is because I actually want to take people away from the world. Mm-hmm. I actually want to take people away from what they're experiencing that's negative and war.
I respect
And warlike. Yeah. Like, I want to give you a love song. I want to make it like so. I want to give you something so sexy and so, you know, something you can bang to, whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to give you a groovy track. I'm trying to give you great music in a way that you can
actually. You need another beer, Dylan?
I'm all right. I think we might need to take a quick break because I do have
no problem.
No, I'm going to be taking the piss, you know?
Yeah, we should just, I feel like this one's going to be a lengthy one. We should just have these phones plugged in.
Gracias. Yeah, I'm down to hang for like another hour.
Yeah, dude, whatever.
We can go as long or as short as you want.
I have like dinner plans at
dude,
like
no worries. Really, whatever you're
doing. I'm having a great time.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, no, this has been great.
I think this is funny. Like, what? I don't think I got myself canceled yet.
No, you're good. You're walking that fine line. You're walking that fine line.
Can you plug these in?
Yeah, these
little does he know we don't edit at all. Huh? Let's plug these in. I don't want
to. But she's on top of this, dude. She knows. She's on top of this.
But like my phone, for example, it'll still drain even if it's plugged in. It just drains slower because I have the. Can you at least put it on my phone?
Yeah.
Because. Yeah, just take my case off.
I always worry when I put these headphones on that my hair looks ridiculous.
Dude, this podcast is awesome.
Hot fire.
I love it.
I love it too, man. What have you been doing this week besides working on the podcast? Anything?
Dude, just working on the podcast.
Dude, it's been engulfing my life, dude.
A long time. I hope
we
start getting some traction here because...
It's literally the only thing I work on is just like researching.
I started Chris's last night and then did Dustin's yesterday. I continued Chris's yesterday and then finished Dustin's. It was like all day, all night till like 2 in the morning.
It's been a lot. It's been a shit ton of work, but you know what? I'm glad we've been doing it, man.
Yeah. No, it's been great.
This episode, guys, is going to be...
This is the one.
Oh no! This is
something.
So far, it's the best one yet, Dylan.
Yeah. So far, like, so far, so good.
Like I hear one guy who say like he tried to go for under the spiritual.
Yeah.
In dreams and whatever, he tried to go inside.
Oh, like lucid dreaming. Oh, lucid.
You know, Riley was big on the lucid dreaming.
Riley and I both tried
to do it in college.
Well, yeah, I was too.
Yeah, we all of us did.
I have tried. Have you ever lucid dreamed?
I think we should jump back in on where I left off.
Sorry, leave us off. We were talking about it'll be a great cut.
No, from the bathroom.
We were talking about
and, you know, and I just so you know, I have to lean back. It almost touches the bottom of the table.
Protest songs and all kinds of shit.
Okay, so what I want to talk about is escapism.
Yes, yes.
Like escapism is important in art.
Yeah, I'm fascinated because totally. I have certain feelings about this as well. So I think there's a place for art
that kind of touches on things in the current culture, but sometimes, especially nowadays, I feel like it can be exhausting.
I want to escape more.
I want to escape the real world. Take me away from all the shit we're constantly hearing.
Here's what I can't stand. And I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's the difference. Okay, so I am also a massive Tolkien fan.
I'm a big nerd.
There we go.
Major nerd.
There you go. There's something that Tolkien felt really, really strongly about, and I very much agree, which is a lot of people read The Lord of the Rings when it came out, and they read it as allegory.
Yeah.
Being allegory meaning the one for one substitution of something. So for example, you could say like the ring equals money or nuclear power or whatever it might be. Mm. And you can do that with a great football. Yeah, exactly. And you can do that with a great many things, and there are many, many pieces of work in the world that are written, created through that lens.
But it still lets you escape.
But Tolkien hated that. He very, very much disagreed with that. He hated allegory, as I do, frankly. And he said that, no, what I'm creating something called applicability, which is the ring doesn't equal anything. It's the ring. All of these things in the world, I am creating a world. Now,
maybe it's applicable to your world.
Exactly. Yeah. And what happens is us as people experience these things, and we, in the mind of the reader, think, oh, that's applicable to all of these things in my life or all of these things in this life. And it's within the mind of the reader that occurs.
Yeah.
He hated allegory, and I feel the same way, again, because that is in the mind of the author. And there's by definition, there's one correct way to interpret that. And whether,
right, you got your purists, the Tolkien purists, that exactly. are like, it's got to be this way.
And he hated that. He said, no, that's just actually the antithesis of what I'm doing. What I'm doing is I'm making a really good story.
Yeah.
And it's through good stories, and I feel the exact same way in my songwriting. And yeah. I feel the same way in all of the art that I love, which is anytime I get the smell that, oh, this is what this person wants me to think, it immediately turns me off from that, whatever
yeah,
that thing
I
is.
I know what you mean.
Where what's much more interesting, I believe, is when people...
It's like inferred.
Exactly.
Like a good movie is not telling you the plot as it's happening, and you're like, oh my God, yeah. I know what's going to happen. How boring.
Again, it's all stories. And to me, the my favorite stories are stories that I can go back to. And as I change throughout my life, I can feel how, oh, this, I experience this differently because it's me reflecting onto that thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
well, we oftentimes kind of, you know, project ourselves onto everything.
Yeah.
And we make everything about us. Yeah. And so, but that's the great thing about art. You can experience it in a myriad of ways, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I've come around to just kind of being literal. I don't leave much up to interpretation.
I'm the same way.
You know, like I write now and it's like, here's how I feel. And like Cowboy Killers that I did today, it's just kind of a song about me.
It's a great song, by the way. A
song about me dying early, but it's also about my grandfather who smoked a ton. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just kind of more just literal. Like if it happened to me, I'll write about it, which is so funny. I wish I could write like fantasy, and I'm working on that as a songwriter. I just wrote a song recently with my buddy Brian, and it's like a Johnny Cash like story.
Yeah.
But really for me, I'm just so literal, and it's coming from my life, but also coming from my life to try to take you away from the pain that I went through or the pain that you're going through and taking you somewhere else. Because when I'm depressed, I want to watch Lord of the Rings.
How much of the audience being the person on the other side of that music is factoring in when you are creating that thing?
0%.
Yeah, same.
0%. 0%. I'm thinking about the audience. I might be thinking about the audience when I'm in the studio and producing. mm-hmm. and I'm in there and I'm like, well, it'd be cool, you know?
Yeah.
But in the moment when I'm writing a song, I'm not thinking about anybody, but just trying to get out a feeling for myself. It's like therapy. It's just getting out. It's cheaper than therapy. I always say that. Music is cheaper than therapy. If you're a poor,
I don't know, it adds up.
If you're a poor kid right now in Mississippi listening to this, just know a guitar is cheaper than therapy. Go get a $120 Yamaha right now and go sit down and just try to figure out what you're feeling, and your songs might suck. They might suck for a long time.
Well, they're going to suck at first, and that's you just, it's like anything else. You just put the reps in, you just keep doing it.
I remember throwing out a notebook one time when I was like, I think 14, and it was like my 11, I was writing since I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. It was like, I was writing poetry since I was about 7. So I would be I would actually go in on the computers in school and like write poetry on the fucking little Macs that with the colored see-through. You know what I mean? You remember those?
Yeah, yeah.
With the backing that was see-through.
Yeah.
And so I've been writing for a long time, and it was always a way for me. And also, I was like a super emo kid, dude. It was like super.
We all were. We're all musicians.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're also cursed with feeling a bit more. I think, I don't know what it is. I don't know much about the human biology, but I just know that being a musician, there's something in you, maybe just chemically, that's just a little bit more sensitive. Mm-hmm. Like how whales are very sensitive to vibrations.
I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like to me, it's
musicians it's are very, like, I'll go into a room and be like, oh, I can feel you, dog.
I love hearing you talk about that. Cause for me, I've had a similar experience, but it's also been a little bit different in the sense that, and I've talked about this with Brian before, I write exclusively in character at this point in my life.
That's bad. So you're writing like stories.
Yeah. But I write, it's not stories. It's always first person, but the I is someone else.
Yeah.
So, and the reason I got there for myself is I just got to a point in my life where I stood on stage playing these songs and I think, why the hell does anyone care what I have to say about anything?
Right.
It started, and again, there's nothing wrong about that.
So it's like writing fantasy almost.
Yeah. But to me,
you're world building.
Yeah. I started doing it and I started getting up on stage and I kept thinking, why do these people care what I have to say about anything? I don't even care. Like I don't even care what I'd say about these. You know what I mean?
And it's funny how we all come to our own conclusions on like how to write.
And I got in. I got to a place where what I started to realize was that I want the same creative freedom in my writing that I would have as a novelist or as a filmmaker or as a painter. I wanted to be able to explore different ideas and
more colors.
Exactly. And where I got to with it was there are a lot of people who write in character, and the character is again sort of there to prove a point. And oftentimes you get this experience when you're watching someone perform this way, where the character is kind of the butt of the joke, and you as the performer are up there kind of giving a wink and a nod to the audience, like, Ed,
love being cheeky.
And to me, I don't like that. Like, to me,
you don't
that,
like
no,
a little
I
cheeky?
Hate that.
That's
it,
so
well,
funny.
No, I don't mind a little cheeky, but to me, what I started to realize is, so I have this song called Mr. Relatable, which I'll use as an example, cause I think it's a good example of articulating this, where it's this character who is very, he's very well off. He's an actor who things were going really well, but now they're kind of starting to fizzle out. And he's got a lot of problems, but they're not problems that the audience can relate to. Like his Bugatti's in the shop right now, cause someone hit it and they closed his favorite 5-star steakhouse. And like,
unrelatable.
Exactly. But there's two ways you can do that. The first is to go up there and give that sort of wink and a nod to the audience. Like, hey, do you get it? Like, fuck this guy. Mm-hmm. That's not interesting to me. What's interesting is sitting in his shoes is for me to look through the world through his eyes and say, and not only is that more interesting, but it's also great because you realize that he's aware of this. He is aware of the fact that you think this is fucking absurd. And he's saying, I don't care. Like, these are my problems. You have your problems. These are my problems. And there's something I think a lot more sincere and very powerful about that. Cause for me the audience doesn't factor in whatsoever for me as well.
Yeah.
And so for me, I find it's an exercise in sympathy for me. I find that doing it that way, having to look through those characters' eyes for that 3.5 minutes or whatever it is, it makes me a better person because it makes me understand, oh, There's a lot of different ways to look at the world.
Yeah, and you get to live a bunch of lives without having to live a bunch of lives. Exactly. That's the beauty of storytelling,
and exactly. And that, as a, again, as a completely selfish endeavor, that's what I find I get out of that. And it's interesting because you find yourself saying things, you find these people saying things that you wouldn't expect them to. Like for me, it's like an
alter ego of sorts.
Kind of, yeah. And it's like, for me, I write and I generally have a character in my head before any lyrics show up. And I don't know what they're going to say. I get an idea of kind of who they are and what their life is like. But oftentimes the first line that comes is not at all what I was anticipating.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's something sort of out of left field. I think, oh, I didn't think that person was going to have that feeling or was going to. But that's, I think that's great because that's, we're all so multifaceted and we all have so many conflicting views in our own head and we all have so many different ideas.
It's fun to watch them play out. Music is just a field where you can watch your mind play out in front of you. It's kind of like, how can we understand ourselves if we don't have a canvas?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to have a medium to let yourself play out into.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't have like a creative outlet, it's just like, oh, dude, life can be really bleak and sad. And the storytelling, it's so funny you say you write like that because I'm like the complete opposite. Like it almost like has to happen to me. Like it literally has to like happen to me. It's so funny because there's a million ways to write. But for me, it's like if it did not happen to me, it's so hard for me to get it. But then if it did and I'm like, oh, fuck. And then I get that one line where it's like, that's the line where the character in the song is relating to me.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm that guy. Now I can sing the song. They always say don't sing a song you don't believe in, you know? So yeah, whatever way you can wrap
it. Don't get me wrong. It makes me say all kinds of shit I never expected to say in songs.
But. That's good. Now, I wrote a weird song like that recently. It was like, tequila and amphetamines, 100 miles an hour. And I was like, tequila and amphetamines? That's badass. Yep, there we're doing that.
I like that one, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's like a Western song. It's going to be cool.
That's really cool.
We're going to get it out. We got a lot of music coming out.
Yeah, you've got the EP, the live EP coming out, right?
It's crazy. We got our vinyl coming out. Record.
How did that happen? How did the our vinyl
thing? Well, my buddy Alan, dude, we just were boys back in the day in the East Nashville scene. I love Alan. Shout out to Alan. And we spent a lot of time together. And then they make really great films. And it just came down to him being like, hey, you want to do another live film? We had done one live film already, 4-song EP. And they wanted to do a live in-studio audience, which... just was like, maybe just, yeah. I was like, pucker up. I was like, I've never done that in my life.
Wait, so how many tracks is it?
So I think it's 7 song live EP.
That's exciting, man.
Record.
That's really awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah, dude, it was really cool.
When's that coming out?
That's coming out in December. December 16th, I do believe. Could be wrong. I have a single coming out. What's tomorrow? The Monday the something?
Tomorrow's the 27th, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We're gonna be
probably this will come out right around the
single coming out. So there's a single coming out from the live EP, and then we're actually dropping the second single from the live EP, which is Shout Out Lily May on the record, and she's touring with Post Malone right now as the fiddle player.
Wow, there you go. Wow. Will Allison play on it, right?
Yes.
Nice.
Will Allison on the bass.
Who else is on it?
And we have Chris Lippincott on the steel and my buddy Jason Monday on the drums. It was a 4-piece band. And then we had Lily on the feature. So we're releasing we're releasing 2 singles off the record to kind of just keep the steam going and let everybody know what's going on. But we got a single coming out a couple days from now, so you guys will see it. It'll be out. And then next month we got the one with Lily. And then December, the whole album comes out and it'll be actually like kind of a biopic. Mm-hmm. So they followed me around with a camera for like 2 days and were up in my face and stuff. And like,
that's really cool.
Got me shaving and shit. It's weird. Yeah, it was weird. I'm getting better at being on camera. You know, I might say some dumb shit if you give me a microphone, but they made me sound cool.
That's good.
They cut it up, dude.
We'll try to do the same.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's fine. I'll say a lot of wild shit, but I do believe it. That's the thing. Like, if you want to debate me on the wild shit I say, please sit down and talk to me.
That's what life is for, man. That's what life is for. Because
I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. Like, I keep saying, Freemasons, let me join. Let's prove me wrong that you're not
sacrificing babies. Exactly. Let me join and
we should let some on the podcast. You know, we could have an interesting conversation.
Freemason.
No, we'll have a debate. We'll have Dylan and a Freemason
Dylan
up here.
Dylan versus Freemason. interesting debate. On
he's
going
to hands down know more about Freemasonry because he's amazing. I've sat with these guys, and they're always like, they're smart guys, man. Yeah. But yeah, prove me wrong is all I'm saying. Prove me wrong. I would love to just, you know, just let me in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is this? So I'm trying to think. So your album, Old Letters.
Oh, came I have. And I forgot to give you these.
Oh.
Oh, a gift.
Oh my word.
A magic trick, a magic trick. I really did. I have them sitting down here. That's for you. Let me
That is so nice, so sweet. No, dude. that's fantastic. This
Let
is,
me sign them before I
oh,
leave.
Please
okay?
do. Yeah. By the way, this record is really, really fucking good. Like Thanks, this is man. A great album. This came out a handful of years now, and it is so fucking good.
Where can people find this to listen
oh, you
to
can
online?
Just,
yeah, or buy
All
it.
Platforms? Yeah, you can buy it. I have a little Shopify. Shopify's great. You know, I love Shopify. They're great. And that's the record right there. I feel like I'm on the Tonight Show now. I will sign these boys for sure. And you can get it on my Instagram. I have like a little link tree there, and you nice. Can look. If you just look me up online, my store will show up. You mm-hmm. can buy that record. I always tell people this is actually my new like introduction when I do shows, and I yeah. kind of got it approved by one of my best friends, who's like my mentor. I like said it at a show one time. He's like, "You have to say that at every show." So I was just up there, and instead of like saying a bunch of like, "Visit my Instagram, this and that," yeah. my new thing is, "Hello, everybody. My name's Dylan Smucker, and I'm on the internet." and then I'll play a song. So it's just like
I usually direct people to the OnlyFans, so that's better. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a good, you know, in these times of trouble, you got to make money, you know. As long
exactly.
As
2020 was rough for all of us.
Oh yeah. My god, dude. I was partying harder in my life ever in my whole life in 2019 and 2020 than I will ever party ever oh, yeah. again. Ever again. And it was so intense and so crazy, and then the world just like decided to almost end, and they shut everybody down, and all my buddies were still partying.
And I just kept partying in my living room, yeah.
Oh my god, dude, it's so funny that like I was like, it's gonna be the roaring 20s.
Yeah.
America's gonna fuck. And it's like, and then we just totally didn't do that.
Yeah.
We just didn't. It was like yeah. the opposite. It was like the economy was like whoopsh. It was like just smacked it down. But dude, I'm telling you, going up into 2019, 2020, dude, I had more like too much fun. Like they yeah, should
same.
I mean, it's amazing.
I had
never
so much
had a
fun,
DUI.
I had to dial back, yeah.
Never had a DUI.
That's good.
Never been in jail.
Nice.
Round of applause on that one. There you go.
Yep. I'm the yeah. only. Yeah. So
wait. So the
keeping dad proud.
There you go. There you go. So. What have you, so you, this came out, what, 2019, right? I think yeah. 2019.
Yeah, dude.
What if, I'm trying to think, what have you put out since then? Has there been anything in the,
yeah,
in
singles,
between? Singles, right? You put out a bunch of singles.
Bunch of singles. I try to, I'm trying to stay on it, you know, I'm not.
Yeah. That's what I started doing. I just started doing singles. Yeah.
It's great. I love an album, and we have an album in the works, and the R Vinyl stuff will essentially be an album, but I'm like, mm-hmm. I just try to keep stuff in between. You yeah. know, and just like if I have a song yeah. that I think is cool, like just put it out. My buddy Josh says that a lot. He's my best buddy, that Australian guy. I love that guy. We just put out a song a couple of days ago.
Nice.
And it's called "The Way That It Does," parentheses, "The Way That It Doesn't Hurt." It's kind of emo. But a lot of singles in between. A lot of singles in between. But really just slowly been working on this big album. I have like a 10 song album coming out next year after all this R Vinyl
stuff. Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, it was this album. And then we did some singles, and then I did the last
yeah.
project I did with R Vinyl, which was a 4-song EP, and that was just banger. It was great, but it was also not that hard. It was me and a guitar.
Yeah,
you know, that's
it's
like
good to have that variety, though.
We did it at the yeah. Dive Motel. It was super cool.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
And then this time they were like, "We want to see you with the full band," and I think I'm the only artist they've had back for a round two. So, really? Which is really
hey, but you're a
cool.
Gibson artist, so that's there. You
I
go.
Am a Gibson artist. Yeah. I ought to shout them out. My Gibson's over there. I don't want to go grab it. It's beautiful. You'll see it.
Yeah, if you watch the performances, you'll see it is a damn good sounding guitar.
It's the J200, man. I think is the best body shape, the best guitar you can. I mean, it's like great for street performing too. So I have an old EJ200, which is the Epiphone version of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the, like, you know, shittier. It's not shittier. I shouldn't say that because Gibson.
I would say
Gibson
the poor man,
me up.
The poor man's guitar, but
the poor man's Gibson.
It's the middle class man's guitar.
dude, is great. The Epiphone J200 is definitely the working man's Gibson, and I got that when I was a kid, and I played that for so long. But it's got the same body shape, but with a cutaway.
Mm-hmm.
But the full J200 shape like that. you can be on the street corner. You can be,
yeah, that thing,
you can
projects.
Do like a fun acoustic,
yeah,
gig.
Loud.
You can like have the band turn off all the music and you're just, you're singing with your guitar, yeah, you know, John Mayer, and going for it. And it's just, dude, you can fill a whole room with, mm-hmm, that guitar. And I can sing pretty big. My dream is to just be Pavarotti. Like, I just want to, my dream is to gain maybe like 100 pounds and always have a tan.
It's pretty easy.
Because I'm 30% Italian, but I'm trying to like turn that up. I'm trying to see if I can, crank that up. And I might be exaggerating. It might be like 17%, I think my mom said. But this, I love singing that way. And I just, someday I just want to be like Pavarotti.
How did the Gibson artist thing happen? How did
they
occur?
Saw me playing a Gibson on that first Art Vinyl project. They saw me playing a Gibson. And they were like, "You look cool with that. Is that yours?" And I was like, "Nope, can't afford it." Yeah. Like, literally, I was like, "Do you want to give me a deal?" I literally was like, "Do you want to give me a deal?" They were like, "Well, yeah, you come in and view the Gibson shop and we'll give you the tour." They showed me the vault and they were like, "Yeah, well, you got the deal now. It's a really good deal."
There you go. Well,
I don't want to give away. It's
dream.
A great deal.
That's the dream. Yeah.
So it's not like they give you free guitars. Everyone thinks like you get a Gibson sponsorship or you get, yeah. I always see my friends who would get like Fender, you know, endorsements and stuff, and then they're like, "Whoa, they have a Fender." Mm-hmm. And it's like, you got to buy it.
Yeah. Someone still had to make that guitar. Yeah.
I was like, "So are they? Can I have one?"
Do they like promote your shit or like repost your stuff?
They followed me on TikTok, which is the coolest promotion I could have asked for, because I'm like one of like, I don't know what it's at like now. Like last time I checked, like 40, they followed like 46 some people, you
nice.
Know, like
that's very cool.
And I'm like, little Dylan Smucker is there like Slash and like, you know, I'm like, this is not right. Like, but on Instagram, I think they follow me on Instagram too, but it's just funny. Like looking at the little list they have on TikTok and then I'm in there.
Yeah,
and I'm
that's
like,
killer though. That's awesome.
It's kind of cool.
That's a really cool thing.
It's little things really like cool that. Thing. Yeah. Me and Gibson have a good relationship. I love them so much. I can't say anything bad about their guitars. I've always loved their guitars and old years, modern years, you know, and the cool thing they gave me as a perk, mm-hmm, was that if I ever have a show or a recording, like say like an R Vinyl or a podcast, mm-hmm, I need to bring on a guitar, or I'm doing something special for a music video, they said I can come to the garage, like give them 24 hours notice, I can borrow anything.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
I can fucking borrow anything.
That's really
in the garage, and like, which is super cool. They're just like, "Hey, just bring it back a couple of days." Like, they were like, Lucas Nelson was in here the other day and he just grabbed a couple of guitars for the Ryman. He's like, "I'll bring them back tomorrow or the next day."
That's
like,
really cool. That's awesome yeah, to do that.
So that's kind of the relationship they have, and they're amazing. I didn't expect that much hospitality from a guitar company, you know. Yeah. It's the coolest deal I could have ever gotten, because now, I mean, I'll play my Fender. I don't think I have like, there's no exclusive on that kind of stuff. You, mm-hmm, can, I can play other guitars, yeah, you know, but, they just want to, I know what they're doing. They want to market their guitars to the next generation, and they want to see people playing them. I already like playing them.
Yeah,
I already like playing them, you know?
Yeah.
That R Vinyl video, I think pre-war era Gibson. It was like a 30s.
Really?
Yes. It was like a 1930 Oof. Something, maybe a 1930, 38 or 39.
I love being old. I've got.
And it was a J200.
Yeah, I've got a 54. Like, wow. J50, and that is my favorite sounding instrument on the face of this earth. I love that guitar.
Yeah.
It just sounds so goddamn good.
It's just one of the greatest guitars. And Gibson's general, that guitar too.
Yeah.
I need, that's what I want. I want like a little parlor one. I got a Taylor too, but I don't have too many. I have four or five right now. I'm at six guitars that I really love, and
yeah,
I'll buy and sold either. Them. You know, I'll buy and sell some stuff, and but I got my true blue guitars that have been with me for a long time. And I know this Gibby. Mm-hmm. It's Princess Peach, by the way. That's Princess Peach.
Oh, very cute.
You'll see that. I named her Princess Peach. So thank you, Gibson, for that. It's a beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have been able to afford it. Like,
yeah, that's really
cool. Old truck's worth the same, yeah. the same as that guitar.
Guitars are fucking expensive.
Yeah,
guitars are expensive.
Yeah. So, but don't let that discourage you, kids. If you're out there, like I said, if you're out there in Mississippi right now and you're listening to this podcast.
Buy any guitar.
Go to a pawn shop and find something cheap. Just find something cheap.
You can get some great guitars for
Yamaha makes great guitars.
My favorite electric guitar I own is the cheapest guitar I own.
Yeah.
No, they're like a little parts telly over there.
That thing sounds
good. Little Frankenstein.
Good.
Yeah, Casey
that
loves that
pickup
thing.
Sounds
Dude,
good.
I just found it at Fanny's.
Yeah.
Better, and I have guitars that are like $2,000 or whatever.
Yeah,
this one I paid, I think, telling like $600 for. Yep. It's the best sounding guitar.
I got
guitar
that Washburn that I bought probably, I got that guitar probably close to 10 years ago now. But I had
my Gibson. I've had that for years, and yeah. I needed another acoustic guitar to kind of take the wear off because I yeah. played it so much,
right.
and it was like, okay, this is, I need something else here. So I got, Washburn did this series probably 15 years ago. Washburn's been around a long time.
Washburn's great, dude.
And they did this run of, like turn of the century models where they didn't like totally, they didn't put out an old model. They kind of did these weird hybrids where they took a bunch of different ideas that they had done of these sort of like 1890s models and kind of put them out, and they sound, it's such a good sounding guitar. Yeah. It's this little parlor body that Brian loves playing that thing.
Yeah,
it's got the really wide, nice like, yeah. it's got the big V neck
that
on
thing
it.
Is
you know?
Nice.
It's, yeah, I love the sound. Like, and that guitar is less than a grand. It's probably $800-$900.
Play that Django type shit yeah. on it. You know,
it's a good, it's mm-hmm. a good sounding guitar.
Yeah, I have a little Yamaha like that. It's like, you know, a little $250 Yamaha classical. And I just found one on the wall one day that just had great tone. And I'm
yeah.
like, this is...
yeah. You can find, like, you know whose guitar I love is Josh's.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
like
this
yeah.
little cheap classical guitar. I think it's a Yamaha.
I think it is, too.
It's like, dude, every time I come over to his house, I'm, like, glued to that thing.
And certain guitars yeah. have certain, they have, they want you to play a certain way. Like, I bought, a few years ago now, I bought a, you know, Recording King? It's these kind
they're
of cheaper,
great.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
I bought one just because I didn't have a triple O size.
Sounds very bluegrassy.
Exactly. I didn't know? Have a triple O size body, and I was like, you know what? I want to just get something really more for just that really twangy, scratchy sound.
Yeah.
That it's a very particular sound that I just didn't have anything that was like that. So I
yeah, that high spent, end stuff. You want yeah, more high end.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. Yep. It's, and I can't even remember how much the guitar was. It wasn't for the cheapest instrument I've ever bought in my life. And to this day, I love the sound of that guitar. Like, again, I'm not going to, you know, go out and tour with it, but it's a good guitar to like bring on a hike or on a,
or even just a recording, man. It's good to have it's good to have options when you go
exactly.
to record, you know, or like now that I can just go borrow one.
That's because really
that's
nice.
What I used to do on my last records and stuff. I'm like, I don't have this sound. Let me go borrow a guitar.
Yeah.
And, but you got to do what you got to do to make the records, man. It's the true. Records aren't going to make themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, currently I'm still self-funding all my records. And doing this by myself, I have a little bit of help. I have a manager. She's great. And, but man, it's stream the music, folks. Stream yes. the music. Listen to all my new songs 1 million times each. And then when you do that, listen to them.
And we will put all your links you got in the description of the video and stuff like that.
That's so great. I don't know.
Click
what,
right to it.
What time are we at? I might have dinner plans.
Oh, yeah.
I might need to head, guys.
Yeah, let's call it. Yeah, we'll call it. I gotta say, Dylan, I'm so glad you did this, man. This was a ton of fun, and the song sounded. I mean, I told you this a million times, but the song sounded really fucking great. And
yeah.
I love that record. I can't wait to hear
fan.
The next one. Yeah,
dude, thanks, guys. Well, we're trying to make just records. As I change, the records will change. So I'm
yeah,
just glad the I'm glad the people are sticking along, and thank you to the listeners out there. Thank you, guys.
Of course.
And thanks for letting me smoke in your kitchen.
You mean our studio?
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, this podcast is going to do big things, people. It's going to be big. It's going to be bigger than Rogan. It's going to be the biggest thing in the world.
You heard
it
here first.
You heard it here first from me.
Thank you.
Hell yeah.
That was great, dude.
Come
back and do it again sometime.
I felt like that was a great note. We got into the nitty-gritty of some
exactly.
music stuff at
exactly.
the end there.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a great note.
Plus, you know, the more we can talk about the Freemasons, the better, you know.
And you might, yeah, do you guys chop it up and make it, you
well,
know.
You're good, man.
You're